Sandishta,
having been ordered,
evam,
thus,
Bhagavata,
by the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
tata iti,
so be it,
Om,
affirmation by the mantra Om. Iti,
thus,
tadvachaha,
his words,
pratigrihya,
accepting the order,
parikramya,
after circumambulating him,
gam,
to the surface of the globe,
gata,
she immediately went.
Tat,
the order,
as given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Tata,
just so.
Akarot,
executed.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada.
Thus instructed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yogamaya immediately agreed. With the Vedic mantra Om, she confirmed that she would do what he asked. Thus, having accepted the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she circumambulated him and started for the place on earth known as Nanda Gokula. There she did everything just as she had been told. Purport. After receiving the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yogamaya twice confirmed her acceptance by saying, "Yes, sir, I shall do as you order." And then saying, "Om," Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments that Om signifies Vedic confirmation. Thus Yogamaya very faithfully received the Lord's order as a Vedic injunction. It is a fact that whatever is spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a Vedic injunction that no one should neglect. In Vedic injunctions, there are no mistakes, illusions, cheating, or imperfection. Unless one understands the authority of the Vedic version, there is no purpose in quoting Shastra. No one should violate the Vedic injunctions. Rather, one should strictly execute the orders given in the Vedas. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, 16:24, Tasmat chastram pramanam te karya karya vyavastitau gyatva shastra vidanoktam karma kartam iharhasi. The Advaitavadi impersonalists, the Mayavadis, they have an idea about how the Supreme could be overcome by illusion. Maya, the same Maya we're talking about here, basically. But they cannot understand how Maya is the personal Shakti of the Lord. How can he have Shaktis? If he has personal energies, then he's full of duality. Because personal energies means duality. Person means you have two eyes, a nose, a mouth, and so many qualities. And the Supreme Brahman is not supposed to have any qualities. So how they understand it, how they explain it, how Shankaracharya explained it, is that there is a force called avidya. And somehow avidya covers the absolute truth. But we cannot explain whether avidya is something that actually exists or not. We have to say no, neither, or we're not going to comment. Anirvachaniya cannot be determined, cannot be said, whether she exists or doesn't exist. Because the problem is, if Maya exists in her own right, if she actually exists, then the Brahman is not one without a second. She's the second. And if she doesn't exist, how can she do anything to Brahman? If she doesn't even exist. Maybe we can be fooled by illusion, by somebody who doesn't exist.
But how can Brahman, the absolute truth, all perfect, pure consciousness, be affected by something that doesn't exist? We might be scared of something, you know, there's a ghost under my bed and it isn't there. We can be scared of something that doesn't exist. But do you think the absolute truth is scared of ghosts under his bed? No way. There's no way that either a real, there can't be a real other force that can cover Brahman, and an unreal force can't do anything to Brahman. So they have a problem, so they just say, okay, anirvachaniya. It's neither real or not real, we can't say what it is. It's just something. Neither real or unreal, or we're not going to decide. Anyway, this avidya is supposed to cover Brahman, and it's not that he told her, please cover me, because the conditioned souls are foolish, rebellious. I want you to cover me so they can't see me. Just like the boy pulls the sheet over his head. Now the ghost won't see me. You know, so like that. Absolute truth, in the actual fact, absolute truth is supposed to ask, just like here we're reading. He told Yogamaya, you please arrange for my pastimes in Vrindavan, and also you delude the materialists outside of Vrindavan. Even in Vrindavan, you serve as Prautamaya to cover the Dham, so that all the materialists see is a lot of feces and, you know, and place to buy a limka, and that's all they see. That's Mahamaya covering the Dham from the eyes of the materialist. So she serves both her purposes, spiritual and material. On the order, we're reading right here, historical account. Krishna told her to do this, and she said, yes, sir, I will do it. It's a personal interaction. But the Mayavadis have no concept of that personal interaction, that she's his servant, and that she's doing everything on his order. Therefore, he's in control. Where does the illusion come from? From Krishna. Because it's simply his agency, his agent, his energy, who's making the illusion. It's his agent, so he's making the illusion. If I tell my employee to rob a bank, and then after he robs the bank and gets arrested, I say, well, I didn't do it, he did it. But he can prove in court that I told him to do it. I'm to blame. I'm the one who goes to jail. Both of us go to jail. Because I'm conspirator. I instigated the crime. So Krishna told Maya to do what she's doing. He's ultimately the doer. He's the prayojaka karta, and she's the prayojya karta of everything in the material world. That means that he makes her do it, causative. Karayati, jagat srishtim karayati, through his energies, and she's the principal creative energy. So she is taking the proper role. She's not arguing, I don't want to do this. You know, I'll create so much suffering if I delude the living entities. I don't really want to do this. Do I have to? She didn't complain like that. She said, yes, sir, no complaints. I'll
do
it.
My mom said she did the Lord.
Really?
She complained that he was alluring her so wonderful names that you used.
Okay. Anyway. But here, in this version... this time around, she's not complaining. Even after complaining, Arjun complained, but he finally said, Kadeshe vachanam tava. I'll do your order, sir. After a half hour of complaining. Yudhishthira complained for several weeks. Finally, after Bhishma instructed him, he agreed to do his duty and take the throne and rule the kingdom. He agreed. So the devotee may complain a little bit. Kunti complained a lot. But she also was a faithful servant. So, okay, a servant may complain sometimes. But ultimately, if he's a proper servant, he does what he's told, what she's told, on the order of the master. And our master is Krishna. We don't have to submit to other masters, but we submit to the Vaishnavas because Krishna's told us to. Krishna's our master, and he's told us to be friendly and cooperative with all the Vaishnavas, all the Vaishnavas. You know, if we don't cooperate and be friendly, have friendly attitude toward the Vaishnavas, not just external, you know, pretend to be friendly, but we actually feel that we are the friends of the Vaishnavas, and not just a few choice Vaishnavas who we decided are perfect, and then all the other ones we can spit in their faces. No. We had to be friendly to all the Vaishnavas simply because our Supreme Master has asked us, ordered us to do that. His representative, his the Rishi who speaks on his behalf, 9 Yogendra sons of Rishabhadev, or great Rishis, they are authorized to speak as spokesmen for the Supreme. What they say is the opinion of the Supreme, because they know, and they are faithful. So, it was a Karabhajana Rishi, I think, speaking to King Nimi, told him, Ishware taradineshu balisheshu dvishatshu cha prema maitri kripo peksha yakkaroti samadhyamaha. A mature devotee, madhyama bhakta, means he's not paramahamsa, and he doesn't pretend falsely to be perfect, but he's a serious, mature devotee, madhyama bhakta, not a raw beginner who is very rough on the edges and very rough with other people. You know, pretends love for Krishna, but he's rough with the Vaishnavas and with everybody. That's Kanishtha Bhakta, low-class devotee. Middle-class devotee, he makes some practical distinctions. Ishvare taradineshu balisheshu dvishatshu cha. He distinguishes between God, his devotees, God's devotees, the innocent people who are just ignorant, and those who are actually demoniac and hateful of God. So he has to deal differently with these four classes. He cannot pretend to be a Paramahamsa, to love everybody. He can't embrace a tiger. Although we're supposed to respect every living entity, we respect the tiger from a distance. So we have to have unconditional love for God, unconditional willingness to serve under any conditions. And the spiritual master is direct representative of God. We should try to have unconditional love and obedience to the spiritual master also. Taradineshu, but it's not that we have to be like that to all the devotees. How can we do that? Be 100% obedient to all the devotees and have absolute pure love for all the devotees. It's not possible in the real world. If we listened to what every devotee told us, we'd go crazy. And we'd end up, we'd contradict ourselves from 1 minute to the next. One devotee would tell us one thing, then 2 minutes later, another devotee would tell us the opposite thing. You know, it'd be impossible to satisfy all the devotees perfectly, to trust all the devotees. But you cannot trust everybody, even all the Vaishnavas, always, because they're very often not perfectly pure Vaishnavas. They may have mistaken ideas. They may have mistaken bad motives. So we cannot simply 100% surrender to every Vaishnava. And sometimes there's conflicts. When we're not Paramahamsas, we end up fighting with each other sometimes. Sometimes a lot. Depending on how immature we are. The more immature, put together a room full of brand new devotees, they will get into a fight very quickly. They will fight. Fill up an ashram with brand new devotees, there'll be constant fighting. You fill the same ashram with mature devotees, they won't fight so much. Once in a while, there'll be some conflict. So the more mature, the less fighting. But there's always some fighting and conflicts, disagreements in the material world, even among Vaishnavas. So it's not that you can't have no disagreement and have 100% respect and trust and love. But Maitri, what is enjoined, what the Karabhajana Rishi says, the attitude we must have toward all Vaishnavas is friendship. Friends may disagree. And you may know that your friend isn't perfect, and you know there's some things you can't trust about. You know, I don't trust my friend with a bottle of whiskey because I know what he's going to do with it. You know, I don't bring my friend near a television set because I know he's going to sit down and watch it for 6 hours. But still, he's my friend. I know he has failings, but I have friendship toward him. That means, I forgive him for his faults. And I try to help him become better, not drag him down to a lower level. By finding the lowest common denominator, let's enjoy together, you know, and go out and indulge in sense gratification. No, A real friend will help you rise to a higher level of consciousness. So that's friendship. We should be friends with all the Vaishnavas. Be encouraging. Try to be encouraging. Thing is, if you are dissatisfied and upset, then you can't be very encouraging to others. You have to be satisfied in yourself first, and then you can practically be encouraging to others. But we should try to do that. So we have to be satisfied in ourselves, be proper, well situated in devotional service. If we are, then we'll feel satisfied. If we're irregularly or improperly situated in devotional service, then we won't be satisfied, and we won't be able to help other people very much. But if we're doing devotional service the way it's supposed to be done, according to our capacity and our real level of advancement, not pretending to be a lot better than we are, not pretending to know a lot more than we actually know, but being honest, humble, and faithful, and trying to serve to the best of our capacity, then we should feel satisfied. And in a condition of satisfaction, then we should be able to be compassionate to others. So we have to, first of all, well, we shouldn't be so upset that we start cursing God. Then we're really in trouble. But we also should not be so agitated and dissatisfied that we can't be friendly with the devotees. That we have to find fault, and the nearest people to blame are the devotees. It's easy to blame the karmis, but usually it's the devotees you end up blaming when you're disturbed. And when we're not friendly with the devotees, when we make enemies among the devotees in a gross or subtle way, then we're dragging ourselves back down to the lowest level of devotional service. Madhyama Bhakta must always have a friendly attitude toward the devotees, must be tolerant and compassionate, concerned, encouraging. Sometimes we have to offer well-intended, friendly criticism. Sometimes we have to point out faults. But we do it in a spirit of friendship. And then Balisheshu Dvishachucha, Prema Maitri Kripa Upeksha. Toward the innocent people who are foolish, you have to be compassionate. They may be ill-behaved, they may have so many bad ideas, and their behavior may be abominable. But they're just innocent. Nobody ever told them any better. Nobody told, you know, I guess some people may have said it, but nobody told anybody seriously around here that you're not supposed to eat grains on a codicil. Everyone thinks you can do it. And everybody eats it. They continue eating their kachoris and their samosas on a kadashi. There's no culture here of observance of a kadashi. It's just, you know, the popular opinion that we're bridge bossies, therefore we don't have to observe any regulations. That's okay. Krishna forgives, you know, Krishna tolerates the bridge bossies. Just like we don't expect a cow or a dog to observe a kadashi. So Krishna doesn't expect the Vrijbasis to do it either. But if someone wants to actually practice devotional service, he can't imitate the Vrijbasis, the cows, and the dogs. He has to observe a codicil, not eat grains at least. So the innocent people may be breaking all regulative principles, but they just don't know any better. Or they think that this is the way it's supposed to be. Everyone else is doing this. Why can't I do it also? Why am I supposed to be different than everybody else? But you are supposed to be different. So we have to be very compassionate to the innocent, foolish, average person and somehow convince them that you have to be different than everybody else if you want to make your life successful. Hard to do. And, you know, especially in a culture of conformity. Fortunately, India is not so much a conformist culture. Indians are actually very individualistic, except for when they're in the grips of their families. But beside that, there's a lot of individuality, and there's a million different religions, a million different beliefs and practices. In the Western countries, it's much more conformist. You know, everyone's got to go out and buy the newest, Walt Disney toys, and watch this movie this week. You know, and read this magazine and do this and buy this product. Everyone's doing the same thing and thinking the same thing. And they think that they're free. Anyway, we have to be compassionate to innocent people who don't know any better and try to win their trust, so that they accept the authority of the Vedic message, of Lord Chaitanya's message. So by hook or crook, by prasadam, by making friends with them, by giving them a book, by some means or other, getting them to take a book and give their money is a great way to engage them. They've given their money, and they've taken the Srimad Bhagavatam or the Gita, and they're putting it in their house. That is devotional service, even though they have no intention to ever do any devotional service. They accept Krishna's prasadam. That's also devotional service. They hear the Hare Krishna mantra and appreciate it. That's devotional service. So by hook or crook, we get people to do a little devotional service to start them, even though they have no desire to do it. But then you get the fourth class of people, the envious. Those who hate Krishna, they hate Krishna's devotees. What do you do with them? You avoid them. Upeksha. Don't get into fights with them. If you're not a Paramahamsa, don't try it. Don't try to convert the envious. Just stay away from them. Even Mayavadis, hardcore Mayavadis, they're the most envious, and therefore don't think you can, like Lord Chaitanya, just by your effulgence, convert, you know, crowds of Mayavadis to surrender at your feet. Better just don't even try it. People who want to argue, you know, Muslims or Christians that want to argue theology with you, they just want to waste your time. You know, they're not going to accept what you have to say, unless you're, you know, exceptionally empowered. So the envious we avoid. But anyway, the main principle here for us is to be friendly with the devotees. Without that, we cannot rise to the middle platform. We stay third-class devotees. Materialistic. We will not be able to give up our materialism as Vaishnavas. It's not enough to just practice the mode of goodness. You know, austerities. Not picking our nose and doing other things. You know, even if we do all that, if we do all the sattvic things, we will not give up our materialism until we make friends with the devotees. And it's not enough just to take a spiritual master and be unfriendly with all the rest of the devotees. We have to be friendly with the devotees. And we have a big society of devotees, lots of devotees that we're expected to be friendly with. It's not that we have some small mutt with only 10 members. You know, the ISKCON mutt with 10 members, and we only have to be friendly with the 10 other Babaji's, and everyone else we can spit in their face and call them pigs. Yeah, including the other mutt next door. No, we have a mutt. The ISKCON mutt has got hundreds and thousands of members, and we have to be friendly with all of them. And even the people outside, the people we call karmis, we shouldn't be spitting in their faces either. They're the ones that they're the innocent that we have to be compassionate to. Hare Krishna. Anyway, so Yogamaya is a faithful servant. And she's a friend of the Vaishnavas, even though she gives a hard time to the non-devotees. To the Vaishnavas, she simply offers her respects and leaves them alone and appears to them in her other form of Yogamaya, at least those devotees who are very advanced. She then appears in her divine form and covers their consciousness with the Yogamaya by which they can participate in Krishna's pastimes. Hare Krishna. Okay, so any questions or comments?
It is said that Bhole Nath is the greatest Vaishnava. Is it correct?
Vaishnavanam yatashambhu. Yes, but among the demigods he's the greatest Vaishnava. But according to his own statement, Lord Mahadev told Narada that actually there are greater devotees than me. And he pointed out Hanuman. I think it was Lord Shiva sent Narada to Hanuman. He said Hanuman's a much greater devotee than... No, it wasn't Hanuman, was it? Yeah, yeah. Is it?
Maybe Prahlad.
No, Prahlad, yes, Prahlad first. Yes, Lord Shiva told Narada that actually Prahlad is a greater devotee than me. So if we accept Lord Shiva as the greatest, then we have to accept his word, and he says there's someone greater than him. And that's Prahlad. But Prahlad, then Narada went to Prahlad and said, Prahlad, I hear it from Lord Shiva that you're better than him, better devotee. Prahlad said, no, I'm not the best devotee. Because I just meditated about my Lord, and I only saw him for a few minutes. But look at Hanuman. He worships Lord Ramachandra in person. He was with him for 30,000 years. And now he's worshipping him constantly in separation. So Hanuman is much greater than me. But then Narada went to Hanuman, and Hanuman told him, I'm sorry that, you know, the Pandavas are much greater devotees than me. Then he went to the Pandavas. The Pandavas said, no, the devotees in Dwarka are the best. And among them, the best one is Uddhava. Then he went to Uddhava, and Uddhava said, yeah, Krishna likes me very much. I won't pretend to be humble and say I'm not very close with Krishna. But better than me are the gopis. So, I mean, that we have to accept Lord Shiva's own words, that there's someone better than him. There's a whole chain of better devotees. He's the best among all the demigods. But actually, the greatest devotees are not demigods. Okay. He's the best among all the demigods.
Sir, when Sanatan like to move from Mansi Ganga, then Bholanath came to him and he said, you don't leave Mansi Ganga.
Yes.
He said, the mosquitoes are troubling me very much. So there will be no mosquitoes now in Mansi Ganga.
Yes.
After this.
Yes.
And he requested Bholanath, Sanatan Goswami, that you should also be present here in front of me. He said, I will be always available to you.
I don't know that version, because I think the deity of Chakaleshwara was already there when Sanatana Goswami came. So I don't know who told that version, that story. Because as far as our history says that Sanatana Goswami went there because Chakaleshwara deity, the Mahadev Linga, was there already. So that part of the story I don't know. You know, that Lord Shiva said, I'll stay here with you, because he already was there. Anyway, the other half of the story about the mosquitoes, yes, that we've heard. That's in our, you know, in our books. There are, you know, different sampradayas have slightly different versions of the same histories. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Anything else?